This is Mae Bressel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 613, and it's September 5th, 1983. We number those every week so that you can keep track of what time and what broadcasts different items were discussed. And then through the years, if you record these off the air or get the tapes, you can enjoy seeing how these events unfold. We usually start the program with what was happening a year ago tonight. A lot of coincidences in the one-year cycle. Every time that I look up what I was talking about a year ago tonight, it's in the news tonight. And that's kind of interesting. I was talking last year about The Circle. That was September 6, 1982. The book by Steve Shagan, S-H-A-G-A-N, about the Korean KCIA, the CIA, the gun running, the assassination teams coming out of Korea, the heroin and the drug traffic, the use of Pusan, sending the narcotics from Pusan, P-U-S-S-A-N, to Palermo. And Mr. Habib, who is now, he'd been working, going back and forth to the Middle East, was the ambassador to South Korea and the bag man for Korea Gate. I was talking about the murder of General Carlo Alberto Dalla Chiesa, C-H-I-E-S-A, an investigator for the Banco Ambrosiano and Roberta Calvi. And also, I was talking about the importance of secret societies and the Opus Dei and the crackdown on the Jesuits. The appointment of a new Jesuit chief that February 23rd, 1982, the Pope decided that he would strip power and decisions from the Jesuits, that they were too liberal. And they had a meeting with President Ronald Reagan, and he gave orders to Mr. Arrupe, A-R-R-U-P-E, that the Jesuits would have to have a commissar or a czar, which is the first time in 442-year history of the Jesuits, because they're too left-wing for the radical right part of the church, the Opus Dei. So while a Jesuit priest is assigned this for life and voted for life as the head of the Jesuit order, he was told by John Paul II, who worked for I.G. Farben at Auschwitz and has kept up his Auschwitz fascist tradition, he was told he would have to leave the order. That was 1 year ago. Today I was talking about it, and just today in the San Francisco Chronicle, New York Times, Jesuit leader bids farewell to his order. The very Reverend Pedro de Arrupe, A-R-R-U-P-E, and then a small y, G-O-N-D-R-A, that's his full name, said goodbye yesterday to the society he led for more than 18 years, and he had many friends there, and he espoused the liberal view on social and religious matters. Arrupe was a missionary in Hiroshima when the atomic bomb hit, and it's the first time in the history of the Society of Jesuits that he literally was forced to resign. That has to do with our CIA, with the National Security Agency, with Ronald Reagan dictating what happens in the Vatican and how they have to step down. Last week, I was talking about Western goals. Next Sunday night, September the 11th, there's going to be a program that was put together by the late Larry McDonald. It's 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and then you can reduce your 3 hours or 2 hours Central and Western. Channel 3, and if you don't have it, go to somebody who has cable TV. It's called No Place to Hide. Now I know, looking at the provocation of the Korean airline and the dumping of Larry McDonald, who it was time to unload because of his links to the subpoenas that he got for the Los Angeles Police Department and his other connecting links, it was time to sacrifice him and make him a martyr. John Birch was a Christian in China who was killed, and Mr. Robert Welch formed the John Birch Society because the communists took over China and a young John Birch had been killed. Now we have a congressman, as Mr. Phillips was on television today, saying the first congressman killed by the Reds, a member of the United States Congress. Now the show is made and they can martyr and begin the martyrdom of a sleazy guy from the mafia, from organized crime, from the assassination bureau, from drug dealing all over the world that supported him in his campaign. Mr. Sleazy Larry McDonald will become the darling of the right, and we must keep out in the public all the things he did. Western Goals is his organization, his data bank on you and me and just about everybody listening to this, headed by Larry McDonald. I mentioned it last week on the broadcast, number 612. Admiral Thomas Moore is one of the members of Western Goals, Roy Cohn of the Syndicate. Moore works with Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer, Vice Admiral Lloyd Munston, General George S. Patton. He's got a who's who. Patton is the son of the general who stalled the war and got into the Battle of the Bulge to clean up the missing millions and billions that were transferred from Germany to research the Nazis afterwards. Dr. Edward Teller. We'll do more about Western Goals. I mentioned Larry McDonald last week. I mentioned him a lot. And within 3 days after that broadcast, he was dead, but he isn't gone. And it's up to you people to do research on him and share these pieces of information so that he doesn't get this great cloak of the only member of Congress who fought communists so hard. That's what they were saying this week when he died. Before we get on to the plane crash, I just want to mention again that book out on John DeLorean. There is a new book on John DeLorean, on the life of DeLorean, The Rise and Fall of John DeLorean by Ivan Fallon, F-A-L-L-O-N, and James Srode, S-R-O-D-E-S. And briefly, it says that when DeLorean left General Motors, he was on the salary of Cadillac Company and General Motors and lived in Washington, D.C., and was getting $200,000 a year. And this book describes that his social life, he had picked up his glamorous third wife, Christina Ferrari, F-E-R-R-A-R-E. And this story says that the alliance of him with the General Motors was in Washington, D.C., and this couple threw themselves into the social world of a city, just settling down to Nixon's second term in the White House. It was a Washington still unruffled by Watergate. And it tells about DeLorean and his year with the automobile company, where he got $200,000 stipend from General Motors, and then an extra bonuses and money. And he whirled around with a social crowd from Detroit, business executives with a Hollywood past, and Henry Kissinger, the swinging Secretary of State. Is it any wonder that John DeLorean ends up on the board of Chris Kraft, that owns 20% of 20th Century Fox, with Henry Kissinger on the board? DeLorean did a lot of wheeling and dealing and dirty work, and it was interesting to see that this book does bring up the John DeLorean story. Well, I guess we'll get back to right now, begin with Flight 007. That's James Bond, License to Kill. In case many of you haven't figured it out, you have. That was the Boeing aircraft that went down, the Korean aircraft that went down. Ronald Reagan was absolutely frightening. He had an article, he didn't mention this on the air, but it was in the paper today, about the Russians and how barbaric and civilized and cold-blooded. He keeps saying this. But then there was another story in the Washington Post today, and I quote somebody from the senior administration official that says, in quotes, "We have started the wheels in motion to isolate the Soviets from an aviation standpoint." Now, the goal for war is 1985. We have started the wheels in motion. I bought a game a few years ago on how we would do the strategy for war in 1985. When it comes, you can remember we started the wheels. There was a picture of Ronald Reagan. He came home from the ranch. There's a photograph with him lined up at a table, and some are smiling. He doesn't look too concerned. He's with Edwin Meese from California, who ran the SLA operation and the San Quentin Six. And Meese was responsible for the People's Park and gunning down a person there, the bloodbaths in California, and then he went east with him. There's Mr. James Baker, the staff of George Bush, Murder Incorporated again, with a Nugenhan connections to Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson. Then he's sitting with Mr. O'Neill, the Thomas O'Neill, the Democratic leader in the House, who was heavily involved with Korea Gate at the time of the scandals with Tong Son Park and the payoffs and the little girls behind the rooms of the Senate and the House. He was involved and could hang on to his seat there and be a spokesman for Ronald Reagan. He's sitting right next to him as part of Korea Gate. And next to him is Howard Baker. And Baker was the senator who covered up the Senate Watergate and snitched to Richard Nixon, rather, what was going on at night. And then there's Robert Byrd, a big spokesman for punishing the Soviets. But you ask his relatives why the papers are locked up of Admiral Byrd's secret Antarctic expeditions with Nazis Antarctica, and you get a pretty good idea of what's going on. A bunch of thieves sitting at a table where blood spilling doesn't mean a thing to them and trying to act very righteous. Now, what happened with the airplane. I'll give you my analysis, and we'll hold it up to some kind of a scope a year from now and see how it hangs in. Only three things could have happened. This is the way I figure it. It's been 5 days since the plane crash went down. Number one, the United States warned and knew it was the Soviet Union rather, warned the airplane and knew it was a commercial airline and shot it down and didn't care what was happening. They just blew it up, could care less, the hell with you, this is what we're doing. That's one of the choices, okay? Then there's another choice. It was an accident that they believed it was the spy plane that they flies close to commercial airlines, they finally announced, to hide the spying. Well, that isn't fair on commercial airlines when you take a trip somewhere to know that under your petticoat is a spy plane and that you get through as a commercial because the radar picks up the commercial. They thought it was a spy plane, and they shot it down, and that's the other choice, that they were defending their territory. And then the third choice is that it was a planned provocation by Ronald Reagan, the CIA, and the National Security Agency. Well, you don't have to wait an hour to find out what I think it was, and I'll tell you the reasons I think it was a planned provocation. In the first place, they wanted to heighten the Cold War tensions. Ronald Reagan didn't get through the idea of the gas line of Europe sharing the gas with the Soviet Union, and he wants to break up any possible détente taking place among the Allies. Spain has gone socialist. Italy is socialist in a way. France is socialist. Bolivia, Greece, and they seem to be able to coexist without great trauma, and there are too many of the Allies trying to listen and get along with the Soviet Union right now. In fact, eight senators, members of Congress, were in the Soviet Union for 2 weeks and came home. And then right away, the article said, see, won't they ever learn they trusted the Russians? The second thing is that he's always wanted to reactivate the House Un-American activity. That was Larry McDonald's shtick. And with a martyr like Larry and telling how awful the communists are and the terrorists in this country, he will try to pursue this. This is something they've had on the boards for a long time. Another thing they want to do is to silence the critics of the missile deployment that will take place this winter in Europe. And if you listen and read the newspapers and listen to the news, how could you trust the Russians? See, we told you, we need the missiles in Europe. Don't listen to the peace people. They're barbaric. They're heinous crimes. We can't stand it. Another thing they want to do is to increase the tensions against the Russians to support Central America. Henry Kissinger is there with his bloodbath moving to Central America. So all of a sudden they're saying, see, we're right. If they'll do that there and they take over Cuba and all these various waters, we're right to get the Russians out of Central America. You can't trust them anywhere when they blow up families sitting on airplanes. The next thing is to discourage any kind of trade with the Soviet Union that would better them, whether it's computer work or any kind of cultural exchange, to cut it off. The third is to justify Mr. Nakasone's demand for more and more weapons in Japan. He went to Harvard. He was a protege of Fritz Kramer and close to Henry Kissinger. And he's asking this week very nicely, see, we need these weapons. Japan has to have these weapons. We told you how terrible it is. And he's already decided when he went in, the Japanese people didn't want a budget with weapons. But now when you see how terrible the Russians are, you need the weapons. He was trying to align China and Japan, the United States, against the Soviet Union by saying, we will protect you. They are lawless people. They don't apologize. They don't explain. He wants to crush all liberals. The liberals' name is used in articles I cut out this week over and again, and some are worse than others. And they had to be written in advance because nobody could get out this much stick in 1 week. I just had piles and piles of outrageous articles that came within a day of the crash, and they didn't even know if the plane still was around. There wasn't a trace. Another point is to get rid of Larry McDonald at a time where he's been subpoenaed for his documents with the LAPD because he is a middleman to the mafia, to the military, to the Mr. Habash over in Lebanon, to Chile, to the syndicate, to the Lockheed people out of DeKalb County in Georgia. And once the Civil Liberties Union has documents and begins to subpoena his Western goals, it's time to sacrifice him and make him a martyr. Now, there were a lot of shifting sands this week. I hadn't seen so much going on since last year. It was in June of 1982 where events were moving very quickly. Benigno Aquino was killed in the Philippines, and he certainly left the back burner. There isn't much about the person who shot him, except that they admit he was a hired killer and belonged to the crime syndicate. So that certainly would fit in with the Marcos family. Senator Henry Jackson went to China. He told them that there are better days ahead. He was working with Red China as against Taiwan. He was a friend of Israel. And they depended on him to be a spokesman for the airplane that went down for the Russian propaganda in the Boeings that put him into office, the Boeing plane that went down. And he got on the television and talked about that dastardly act, and then he died the same night. Maybe the pressure of lying, because he was briefed about the airplane just as Earl Warren was briefed about who killed John Kennedy. The pressure, probably, I would bet, if he was given the inner story about that airplane, because how much could they tell? And he was briefed. He went to bed. He watched himself on television and said, "I feel sick," and went to bed and died. "I feel sick, too." So Representative Larry McDonald of Western Goals, who was just subpoenaed a few days ago for his papers to the LAPD, is gone. Aquino, Jackson, McDonald. People that are out are Father Pedro Arrupe that I mentioned, out of the Jesuits. Senator John Tower betrayed the people in the Senate Foreign Relations and quickly got out. I mentioned him last week and said, "I resign." Mr. Begin got out of Israel and said, "I'm leaving," and they refer to that as a mystery resignation. And Licio Gelli got out of the Swiss jails. The reason I mention these things is that every single one of these incidences taps Larry McDonald, Western Goals, Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger, and company. Now, what investigations were going on at this time? See, it's important to know why the plane would go down and what was happening at the time, because that's a clue to if it would be a conspiracy, what would they want to be covering up, and how much would these various people know, particularly Larry McDonald, but also to escalate a situation with Korea that takes your eyes off of the news. Not that the news covers it so much, but the investigation with Los Angeles Police Department, for the first time, Larry McDonald's name made the front page of the Washington Post, August 18th, 1983, regarding Western Goals, and within a week and a half, he was dead. Licio Gelli is still being investigated with his money tied up in the Italian banking scandals and the Nazi P2 organization. Klaus Barbie in France and all of these people have connecting links to Larry McDonald down in Georgia and two reasons why Ronald Reagan would keep hitting away at the Russians as being bad, because every one of these things involves the CIA, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party, and some of the Democrats. The Klaus Barbie story with the CIA and the drug connections with the anti-Castro Cubans in Miami. The Mark Rich investigation with Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford and William Rogers on the same board of Fox. The John DeLorean scandal where he subpoenaed the CIA, the National Security Agency, the FBI documents, the Banco Ambrosiano, the trials going on in Italy. The Milan trial of Stibam, S-T-I-B-A-M, the drugs, the weapons. The Aja shooting of the Pope that turned out not to be Bulgarian, and now they've silenced it because it's linked to the CIA, and the Nuganan Bank in Australia. All of these things are being investigated right at this time. So what Ronald Reagan needs is a good diversionary to say that these people are beasts. And everything that I've listed above has to do with mass murder, with drugging, with extortion, with singling out money from countries of starving people and flowing the dollars other places. Our allies are in trouble, and he has to show how bad the Russians are because our allies are in trouble. Pakistan is having riots against Zia. Turkey, repressive government, the Philippines with Marcos. Chile wants to get rid of Pinochet. They're obstructing Israel, change their dictators. Situations are bad there, and the people are getting restless. Brazil is broke. Argentina is broke. El Salvador is repressing worse than ever, and every major country that took loans is bankrupt. Poland has a $50 million it owns the Vatican. They have about $100 million more down the drain, and solidarity didn't go. The CIA set it up. It didn't wash. Poland's in charge, and it was money down the drain, and our banks are empty. Bolivia, France, Greece are socialists, and Spain, and that being civilized is a threat to Ronald Reagan, who has to whip this lather up. The Russians are bad. The Russians are barbaric. The Russians are terrible. And he gets himself into this tizzy because he wants to divert you from every single one of these things that is happening that is not being analyzed in the news. Maybe Nightline, a program, well, not Nightline, but Jessica Savage had a thing on Roberta Calvi, one on Klaus Barbie. It's a miracle if any of the national television goes into depth for 1 hour every 6 months on one of these subjects. The Wall Street Journal is talking about it, New York Times, the Washington Post, the London Observer. It's in the news. I'm not scrounging around for news, but you're not hearing about it. And the President of the United States isn't addressing himself to any one of these things that ties him in with Roy Cohn and Henry Kissinger and Admiral Moore and Senator John Tower and the whole sleazy gang. So these provocations could break up and tamper the plans that the president has. Now, how could the provocations take place on this airplane? The Soviet Union said this was a United States provocation that you set up. How could we set it up? I'll give you some examples when we talk about the airplane. What would you do if you wanted to outfit a plane in New York City that goes up to Anchorage and then takes your congressman and makes a martyr out of him and blows a plane and blames the Soviet Union when you know that's their territory? There's certain things you have to do, and if you don't do them, the plan won't work. But if you do all of them, the chances are that it is a provocation. And the airline pilots say this was a provocation set up with the equipment, and they recognize that. They are outraged. They say it's impossible. Well, impossible is only possible when the people who control the airplane and the technique for covering it up work together. Number one, you have to tamper with the Korean airline radio instruments, and they weren't working. They did not receive messages or acknowledge conversation with a threat or a suggestion that they land at another place. The second, you have to silence the pilots in some way that there's no indication of their awareness and no response. Now, Korea and Tokyo are the headquarters of the mind control program. Colston Westbrook was there, the SLA people were trained there, the COINTEL programs discussed, the FBI documents on Operation Chaos and COINTEL. The Korean and the Japanese centers have been identified for mind control and experimentations, and United States Army bases in Tokyo and in Japan. Reverend Moon is the largest example of mass mind control there is. Now, those pilots in some way either had to be drugged or be tampered with mentally after their last day, because nothing is coming through. The only thing they said was, we're going to go up 35,000 feet from 32,000. And that's the last thing they said. And they'd been missing 7 hours, and they'd been followed for 2.5 hours. Now, that is totally inappropriate to what was happening. That is kamikaze thinking, just saying by rote. And incidentally, the president said on his speech that the plane was going 35,000 feet up and that no other plane does that. There's no way it's a spy. And I read in the newspapers this week that the spy planes like that altitude of 35,000 because they get an overview of 120 miles. So that was just one of his outright lies. But you have to tamper with their awareness. Now, the first thought was that they were hijacked because there was no awareness that they responded verbally. Keep in mind that the only thing that's happened so far is that the Russians have talked to Russians. The Koreans didn't warn the Korean pilot. The Japanese didn't warn. The Americans didn't warn. We have a budget of about $22 billion for security and communications. That's just the CIA, but the National Security Agency has more. Wouldn't you think that they would have told them you're off course? The radar would have registered. These pilots had no indication and no response. And the one article by a pilot said they had to be asleep. Another one thought they were hijacked. So after they said, we're going up to 35,000 feet, 2 minutes later, they were shot. So it doesn't make sense. There are a lot of ways to control people, but that is an inappropriate statement at that time after being told to flip your wings or turn on your lights or signal or we'll down you somewhere where it's safe. That they simply said the last thing was, we're going 35,000 feet. Next thing you have to do is fix the outgoing radio communication so they can't relay their question. Nothing came in. No radio work could come into them, and nothing came out. The next is you have to equip the computers in some way. There's 10 different sections, and they had to be altered because, according to the airline experts, there is no way. And if there is no way, then they were tampered with back when it started, because the explanation is that they do a trial run, set the computers, it tells them where they're going, and never in the history of the Navy operations, Army operations, Air Force. Have they ever had an airplane with air agencies going where they've had trouble like this? They haven't had a passenger plane that went so far off course with no radio communication in or out. There are 10 different sections, and according to pilots, they had to be altered in some way in order to get there. The next thing you have to do is to prepare editorials and response in advance, long before the facts come in. You don't have to have facts. In fact, even on NBC News tonight, they were saying that the president was pretty strident without the support of facts, that we'll wait and see. Now, in a few weeks, I'll read you some documents of Carl Rowan, who worked with the CIA, a columnist, on what they would do when the Warren Report was published. And next week, I will not discuss the airline. I'm going back to the Warren Commission and the murder of John Kennedy for the reason that Larry McDonald had such an important part in his organization down in Atlanta, Georgia, with the World Odessa Network, that I want to get back to the Kennedy almost every other week because it's the 20th anniversary of his murder. It's enough to talk about his murderers, but I want to go into that. But I will do in a few weeks what Carl Rowan said. He was called by the Warren Commission, and the CIA was asked to sell the Warren Report as accurate the day it comes out, because the memos to each other were saying, paraphrasing it, was, you have a whole new audience, and you tell it to them now, and they will remember it. And don't equivocate, because there's critics to what we're doing. And we have an unprepared whole audience, and you tell them, this is the way it happened, for example. Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone. Don't leave anything to chance. Be sure that this is the definitive work. This is the final work. Well, the editorials in response had to be prepared in advance. I have a bunch of them here that were written. There is no way they could be written in one day after the plane went down, when they really weren't sure of the circumstances. So that the martyrdom of McDonald and getting him out of the way because of his links to these new scandals could be done, and it served the cause anyway, and a lot of people have been off that way. And they prepared this martyrdom with a lot of speeches of what he said and what the liberals said, and now the liberals should be put down and so forth, and we'll do more on Larry McDonald. Another way that you have to take this off is that you have to fly into Soviet territory, and you don't accept landing or moving. You just simply go straight with no reason or no sense, and they're forced to shoot you down because the law says if you go over their territory and they flap their wings and circle and turn on the lights and some other missile bullets around that aren't fatal, if you don't respond, they shoot you down. And also, it is a fact that passenger planes in the United States, United Airlines and TWA and Pan Am and so forth, are supposed to be privately, you know, we have our own Air Force and the Navy flyers and so forth, and CIA to do the spying. But in countries where there's a fascist dictator and where they own the airline, such as Somoza did in Nicaragua, or the Korean CIA, and the pilot in this plane was a pilot for the president of Korea, flew him to Washington recently. He was a military pilot taking orders, okay? And these planes are owned by these countries, and they do the spying for the countries. And in return for the commercial airlines spying for the countries, they give the information to the CIA so that the CIA doesn't have to fly the plane. But over South America, Central America, Asia, the Middle East, Israel owns its own airline. They do the spying and then they turn the information to the CIA. So this had to fly into Soviet territory and just go straight. And then they had to monitor the Soviet communications. And there's no information on, as I say, that any other communication between Korea, between Japan, between the United States, could see that they were off course or followed. They followed every word the Russians said from air to ground, but they don't have a record of anybody else. And I think that's kind of weird. They had to ignore everybody else's intelligence system and say the Russian said this to the Russian and the Russian said this to the Russian, but that's it. Okay, we'll take a one-minute break and get back some more on the fatal 007, remember, James Bond, that's License to Kill.